live, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some arse.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arse with Emma and Stephen and Kristen, proudly sponsored this month by the fabulous team at the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz to check out their latest shows and book tickets. Kick Arse is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz, and check us out on Spotify. Tonight we're chatting with some of the team from Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat, about to take to the stage in Auckland. We're then catching up with singer-songwriter Lucy Summerfield and releasing her latest track here live on the show. And then David, the author of Uncomfortable Economics, joins us to chat about his book and his journey writing it. Now, to kick off the show, since the Joseph team are already in the studio, we better kick off with the well-known song Any Dream Will Do. But I found a good track with three people who really made this show what it is over the decades. Of course, I'm talking Jason Donovan, Donnie Osmond, and Lee Mead. Now, this is a live recording, so do excuse the audience noise, but enjoy. Jason Donovan, Donnie Osmond, and Lee Mead. Good evening, Kristen. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Always good to have you back. And I think you were here last time our guests were here as well.
Yes.
Emma's hiding from them. Of course, Emma busy wrapping tonight Heathers, which she's had on with a fabulous season in at the West Point Performing Arts Centre. You went and saw it twice.
I saw it twice. Week. I had to see both casts to round it out because Heathers was a very instrumental movie when I was growing up.
Ah.
And so I had to see how it was going to be adapted. And it was, I think it's just like basically sold out the whole time.
Yeah,
I was
well.
Lucky to get a ticket. And Oh, can't say enough. So good. So good. Both casts.
Yeah, and you and I saw it on Thursday right up the front and personal, which I've never seen Heather's so sort of in your face.
Yeah.
And man, those young performers, they kept their focus, especially those two boys. Full credit to them.
Nailed it.
Absolutely. And earlier in the week, you and I headed up to Centre Stage to catch a very different show to Heather's with The Importance of Being Earnest.
Yes.
Which was really well done. A few little twists and changes on the original. But yeah, well done to the team at Centre Stage.
And some big personalities there too. They pulled it off so much.
And some you don't want to say past faces because that's not fair. They're still performing. But faces that you don't see all the time on stage anymore because they're usually directing and behind.
Yeah.
Found their place in that show.
It was amazing.
I've just been waiting for Logan and Rose to produce a show that requires a 51-year-old male that can do comedy but can't really sing.
Oh.
And then I'm in,
you know.
But they're just not putting anything out yet.
Yeah. Not yet.
One day. So welcome back. Great to have you guys here.
Oh, it feels like only yesterday we were here.
Yeah.
The last 5 years.
I know.
It's a joy. It's a joy.
And it didn't put you off producing because you've turned around to come back with Joseph.
Our third project. We did three shows this year. After the last 5 years, we did Lightning Thief
with
a cast of children at the Rose Centre. And then, now we're putting up Joseph in 2 weeks at Q Theatre.
Big undertaking. What made you choose Joseph?
It's camp.
Yeah.
I was like, do you know, I'd heard of the show, obviously, who hasn't, but I hadn't seen it. I didn't know anything properly about it. And we were pitching some random ideas to do something bigger, and we kind of knew we wanted to use Q. And then Joseph was just mooted, and I was like, I don't know. And we watched the film together, and it took me 2 minutes into it, and I was like, yes. I love that it doesn't take itself too seriously. But then there's also, like, beautiful, gut-wrenching emotional moments. But the whole thing is just so lighthearted and fun and silly and camp, which is very much our vibe as people.
Nice.
But also it's theatre.
I think it's a very, very, very extra show, right? And it's a constant series of gag after gag after gag. And I think as two people who often sometimes, you know, sorry to say, we'll find ourselves getting a little bit bored when we're sitting down watching things, right? It's kind of a show where you don't have a second to rest and stop and think about what's going on. You just get smacked with another joke or another whole entire musical genre or another amazing costume or another, you know, cool thing happening, you know, and it just doesn't let up. And I think that's one thing that we really thought was really cool about this project.
And while you are the producers, are you involved in it like you have been in your last ones as well? How many roles are you doing? Like, what's happening?
We are doing something crazy. We're both playing narrator at the same time. So we have split, we have two alts as well who are splitting the shows evenly with us. They're fabulous. Sophie Rado and
Ruben Sewer,
who are extraordinary. And but we wanted to have two narrators on stage. Mainly because we wanted to be on stage together. We were like, Logan's not right for Joseph. Like, he would do a great Joseph. But we wanted different. Like, we wanted a Joseph. And we feel like the narrators are so maximalist and, like, again, high camp. And we were just like, that would be such a fun thing. So we thought, there's 26 songs. It's a huge score. We could definitely split it and have fun kind of
playing
with
each other. Initially, we were going to just alt each other and do night by night swapping, but then eventually we just kind of worked out that everything about this show actually functions better with the kind of handoff. And one of the other things it does musically, if we're passing lines between each other, is it just adds another moment where, like we were saying before, something changes or something happens that catches your attention, right? So we're able to constantly kind of play off each other, and then there's two of us for the cast on stage that we're narrating to play off, so it kind of just means there's a whole lot more we can do in each moment to keep people engaged and interested.
And like male-female voice pairing, I think, is an interesting take on the score, but it's worked so far, and it works with the other cast as well beautifully. So
brilliant.
It's fun.
And who's your creative team behind this one?
Well, my mother. My mum's directing it, Tracy Stratton, and she's a longtime theatre gal. She founded and runs Perform NZ, children's education company in performing arts. But she directs a lot, and she always has, but she kind of hasn't done adult stuff for a long time. And I've always been in awe of her. Every time I see her put stuff together, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I wish I could do this as fast and as well as she does. So then when we kind of needed a cheap director, I was
thanks,
like,
Mom.
Yeah, Mom. And she's also a very high camp woman, I think, and very maximalist. And so she gets the vibe. We think have to rein her back, actually. Anything.
We have two choreographers. We have James Luck, Electroshock, of Drag Race Down Under fame. And we have Rebecca.
Yes, Rebecca Dreyer.
Rebecca Dreyer, who is choreographing some of the more like specific stuff that happens like between scenes and transitions and stuff like that.
I was going to say, I thought James was just doing you two. That would be a full-time job.
I know. I think he sometimes feels like it is.
That's cool. And who's leading your music team?
So in rehearsals, it was the Low Gang, which is myself and my good friend Logan Hunt were running music rehearsals in rehearsal. And then for the show, our tech manager, Brandon Packard, will be running it with his assistant tech manager, Zach Johns.
Ah, brilliant. Mm. Brilliant. What a team. Awesome. A team. And two Josephs. And you've managed to drag one here tonight
after a full day of rehearsals. One of them refused.
A big welcome to the show, Jackson Terry. Great to have you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And this isn't your first time in Joseph?
It's not. I played Joseph back in 2024. It was my second ever show with National Youth Theatre and my first one actually since I moved to Auckland. So the show holds a really special place in my heart. So it was really nice to see it coming back around again.
Nice. So what have you done to make this role, you know, feel different and bring some new Joseph life to it?
I think just worked really closely with the creative team and the other Joseph. Like they said, there's so many jokes, so many gags, so many interesting things with the score that when you go throughout the show and you do the show, I feel like you could do it different every single night for a whole season because there's so much.
Yeah, it's really kind of geniusly written in a way where even though if you look at a lot of the lyrics for a lot of the songs, it might seem to appear to be quite vapid. It's just very clear that what Tim Rice and Angela Webber were going for is making it so that every single line pretty much is almost implying a new gag and then a new gag, right? And even if they're not like directly said, you can once you like work them out, they become kind of obvious and you can't unthink them anymore, you know?
That's cool.
So now the difference between 2024 and now, two different, very different places as well. Because I saw you in the 2024 version. It was impeccable. Mm-hmm. So what is going to change for you now that it's going to be at the Q Theater?
Oh, it's definitely more intimate than where we performed it. But I really love it. Like we did a what would you call the show?
Like
a confidence project?
A teaser, a little tease.
And Harry and I, the other Joseph, came through and sang Any Dream Will Do. And it was really nice to be able to not exactly see the audience, but just have them there and feel like they're there and they're nice and close to the stage. And I feel like I connect with them more. So, you know, especially songs like Any Dream Will Do, Close Every Door, those I think will have a little bit more of an impact on the audience just because they're a little bit closer, a little bit more intimate, more feeling,
and a bit more like the original, right? Like, well, especially the one with Donny Osmond where everybody is in, like, surrounding him will be the same. So this could be one of those epic performances that that just, like, I think creates a lot of excitement. And now what I understand is Joseph has now changed over the last couple of years. So my mom just saw it in LA and she said, oh, it's different than the ones that we've seen. So are you kind of pumping that up too and changing it a bit as it's changing around the world?
I think one of the ways we perceive the show is really as a very, very, very heavy, light spectacular, you know? And I think often it's done as a set show or a costume show. And obviously we have costumes and we have a set. But all of what we're doing is really in service to creating these very, very, very extravagant lighting moments. So we have 10 lighting trusses on stage, all equipped with full vertical lights the whole way up on all four sides, and then moving heads on top. So we can use those to kind of create these very different images as we're flying silk psychs all throughout the theater. We've got a mirror ball at the back of the theater as well as a lot of costumes that utilize that sort of disco mirror ball sort of stuff, you know, extreme amounts of sequins, you know, and sparkles so that it all catches. And we're just trying to see how creative we can get with the lighting in every single moment. Like, for example, for Joseph's kind of prison, we have the 10 moving heads create a white light beams in the sky, flash them into the audience, go back up, and then as they then slow motion come down in front of Joseph, all the way down, creating bars, at which point they go up and down, and we add a little lock sound effect so that we end up creating a full, like, kind of prison scape. Yeah. Fully out of just white light beams.
So are you the lighting director as well? That was told with somebody who sat there designing.
We've worked very closely with our lighting director, Brendan Packard, to create a lot of these various states over the course of many more months than we were rehearsing the show. Yeah. We've been thinking about the lighting for it maybe since April or May, you know, which is a long time before we started rehearsals, which were only in August, really.
Wow. But look, you know, you put a point out there. It's a show that has had its little hiatus, then it comes back with a revamp, has a little hiatus. And Lloyd Webber himself has been really clever over the years. I mean, when you think back to the Donny Osmond days and then the filming, and then we had the Jason version, but then he had the TV show. Now, you were probably all too young to remember the TV show.
It was a TV show.
So Lee Mead, who is the one that was in our opening one, was chosen through a reality TV show. Oh. So over 12 weeks, Lloyd Webber and two other judges hosted this show. I'll find you the name of it. He did Joseph, he did Annie, and then he did a third show. I can't remember what it was. And over the 12 weeks, us, the audience around the world, could vote off people and vote on. And you had this cast, and eventually it got down to three Josephs that had to absolutely go for it in the show. Wow. And then Lee won it, and he won the touring contract. So the end result was a two-year contract playing Joseph. It was brilliant. Did you watch it?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I just lived on it. I'm trying to think of the third show. There was Joseph. There was anyone didn't cut it the same. But then they did it. It'll come to me, and I'll let you know. And, oh, my goodness, it was so good. And Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice, and there was someone else with the judges there as well. And a bit like an Idol-type show. And then the audience kick in, the viewers, who actually decide, so nobody knew till the night, who would get the coat. And it was all the emphasis on the coat that literally came down from the ceiling on the one that won.
I think we've worked out the next reality TV.
I was going to say, I'm streaming that tonight.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised he didn't do more, because it reinvigorated his shows for a while and got him, and he quite liked
being
on camera.
Is that, like, really similar to the thing they did with Jesus Christ Superstar and Ben Forster?
That was the third one.
Oh.
That's the third one. So that Joseph, I think, was first. Then they did Annie, and then they did Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I think Joseph was the better of the three shows, yeah. And the world got behind it. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Joseph is the kind of show, I feel like. And, I mean, we have just the most delectable cast. Like, everyone has just got along so well, and there's just such high vibes. And, like, just, I feel like everyone's just in service of the work and of each other, and it's just great mental health across the board, which, you know, isn't always the case. And I think that's actually really important for this show specifically, because especially, like, you know, in today's world and all that sort of thing, I feel like when we go to shows and when we're seeking entertainment, a bit of celebration just for celebration's sake feels like something super necessary. Mm. You can't really do that unless you have the actors being able to deliver their side of, you know, I mean, they can give a great performance, but you feel whether they're enjoying it and whether they've enjoyed the process. You know, you can kind of see it. And I feel like that's palpable. I mean, our Josephs are literally the nicest people I've ever met in my life. You're so nice, Jackson. And so is Harry Stanbridge, who's my good personal friend from before theatre as well.
And are they alternating shows?
Yeah, they're pretty much split right down the middle. Mm-hmm. So you can see them equally. But they're just astounding. And the way they get along with each other, but then the way they get along with the creatives, the cast, everyone I've ever seen them interact with, it's just with this, like, beautiful, genuine energy. Mm. And it's like, it's so Joseph, I feel.
That's cool.
And I think that's one of the nicest things that I've had, the nicest experience that I've had with Ellen now, is just I feel that everyone in the cast is so willing and wanting to help everyone. You know, like, I've definitely been in shows where maybe there's been, like, a little bit of ego in roles, or, you know, people have maybe been bringing people down or not, but it's just been the complete opposite with this. Everyone's, you know, so uplifting. It's wonderful.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a music break. Kristen got to choose her favourite, which was Benjamin Calypso. Does someone want to say what's happening in the story when this
you
is played?
Jackson.
Okay, so the brothers have just come to Egypt because they are desperate, essentially, and Joseph has just been taken in as the number two by the Pharaoh. And so they come to meet Joseph, but they're unaware that it's Joseph because, mm-hmm. you know, it's been so long. And so essentially he agrees to give them food, but he sabotages Benjamin and frames him for a crime. And the brothers right now are about to sing a song to try to convince Joseph, who they don't know is Joseph, that he is innocent.
All right, let's take a listen. Beautiful. Good little bit of music there from Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat. Now, traditionally, team, we've seen massive choirs come in and sing all the background tunes, and our next song will have one. Do you have a massive choir?
No.
We don't have a massive choir. We have a much smaller, reduced choir. Given the size of the theatre, you know, having such a big choir would have meant either knocking out all of the gods or knocking out the mezzanine, and then they're not really super visible by the audience anyway. So we've kind of opted for a very specific mixed approach where in 13 of the 17 shows, our youth ensemble, which will be made up of 7 performers each night, rotating from a wider group of performers, will perform the whole of the choir track for our show, and then will perform, for example, as well, the on-tract by themselves at the start of Act 2. And then in 4 of the 17 shows, we have guest group performers coming in. We have MYT coming in for 2 shows with a group to perform in the on-tract. We have King's School Remy Wera have put together a group, I think, that's How about cool. 35 strong to come in and perform on stage in the on-tract. We have 2 two groups or three groups from Perform?
Two groups from Perform.
NZ. Right. Coming in to perform there as well. Our original plan was to have this kind of like core group of youth ensemble that we rotate in and out, who are like the main seven that we mic and use as an actual choir ensemble throughout the whole show as our static choir, and then see if we could fill up all 17 of those shows with guest groups. But I think it's hard for schools to put stuff together when they've got the big sing.
And you're coming into exam time.
You know. And then also it's during the school holidays, so then it means that the schools are then having to organise something that's not during a school week. So it's kind of, you know, a lot of the choir directors and teachers want to have their break, and that's also completely fair. Mm. So we weren't able to quite achieve what we were going for there. But, you know, we've managed to strike a good balance that works.
Nice.
Have you had that happen before? Have you brought in other groups to back a show?
More.
No. This was the first time we've decided to try and do that. Yeah.
And I feel like you've gotten that far. That's pretty innovative and exciting to now include other people in the community who might not be able to commit to the whole show.
Well,
you're just bringing more people into the arts.
Well, yeah, I mean, because of like my experience growing up with my parents in Perform, I just kind of had a thought about it, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many schools and there's so many little theater companies and youth groups and stuff that just don't get opportunities to perform because it's just too expensive for their school to put on, right? Or for their theater company to put on or whatever. And it means they just lack these performance opportunities. And we kind of thought, that sucks.
We
have the opportunity to put kids in in a free, you know, it's like free for these people.
In a great venue.
In a great venue. I would have jumped on it when I was.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And if the spirit of it, right, given that usually, as you can see in the video that you'd be about to play for the next song, right, you have this massive choir, right, we're thinking, well, Joseph's kind of often trying to be this like community event, right, where you get as many people on stage as possible, and because of that, Andrew Lloyd Webber's written 12 different harmony lines into every song, you know, just so that he can continue adding more and more people on stage to make it as kind of wholesome in that way as possible. We were thinking that, well, Q, based on its size, isn't really able to handle that, but that seemed like the way we could maximize people's involvement with it and kind of have as many people who want to as possible be able to, you know, perform with us and come on stage.
One group did it really well. Did you ever see Indian Ink's Dirty Laundry at Q Theatre?
No, but we were just talking about how much we love Indian Ink.
So with Dirty Laundry, it was set in an office, and they had different choirs come in and be the office workers, like the extras, sitting at the desk the whole way through the show, and all they had to do was sit and work, but they did all the harmonies, the singing, and it was different choirs. As they travelled the country, they got a different choir from each town. And from an acting point of view, it was just, don't look up, sit and work, and only look up to sing. It was really cool.
Yeah. So beautiful. Yeah. I just love stuff like that.
Also, this week announced, and apologies if I pronounced her name wrong, is it Keila Settle?
The famous.
Thank you. Coming to do Sunset Boulevard.
That's your favourite.
I know, we're going to have to go. Trip to Wellington.
Right?
But it's amazing how Lloyd Webber's getting these things sort of ticking again. All right, Jackson, before you're world famous and leave New Zealand and we never see you again, tell us, go back. What first kicked off your arts journey for you?
I think it started in about year seven. I got sort of half forced to be in a production of The Little Mermaid that I sort of thought that I was too cool for. But I did it and it was incredible. And then I took a break and I came back in year 12. I did West Side Story and I was in the ensemble and I was still on the verge of feeling like I was a little too cool for this kind of stuff. I don't know. But I finished it and I found myself on stage on the final night, like crying that it was over. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, nothing's ever.
Got the bug.
And I've just literally never stopped.
That is so cool. Yeah. Dream role, you can't say Joseph, dream role for the future. What's one that you would drop everything in life to do if a producer walked in the door and said, Jackson, have I got the role for you? What would it be?
Orpheus in Hadestown.
Yeah, that was quite
I've thought about life. This for yeah. a very long yeah. time. I've seen Hadestown twice and I'm absolutely addicted.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep.
Nice. Okay. And what about you two? We've talked about your past, but let's talk about your future. Like, this is your third show producing. You know, what's on the horizon for you guys? Do you see this as something you're going to keep doing? Do you try and balance it between performing for others? Or is it like, no, I've got the producer bug now?
Do you know, I think, look, as you know, producing is a woof. It's a, you don't realize how much goes
into it. Still paying off the bank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much that goes into it, and it can be overwhelming, and you can have breakdowns.
It's great when it goes well, but it's tough when it doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a roller coaster, right? But I actually think, from my personal perspective, and I think Logan and I have talked about it before, like, we do love performing for other people, of course, and we've had so much joy in the shows that we've been in, but there's something about being part of the creative process and then also being in it and then also enveloping all these other people that you feel like deserve these platforms. And like, the collaboration and the like sense of agency that you have in that is so addicting. And I think personally, it would be hard for me not to, I'd have to bite my tongue if I was at another show. Like, I'd really want to be part of the creative and seeing it shape.
And it is hard having that switch. But then also, you'll also appreciate and kind of recognise things that they might be going through that the rest of the cast aren't aware of.
Absolutely.
Or a conversation will happen, you'll be like, you're worried about budgets.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah,
that's absolutely fair enough. Well, yeah, I think the sense of empathy that we've developed is huge. I mean, like, you know, you start to realize, oh my goodness, it's a tricky little industry, and the people that we know that are in it, and we've had, you know, lots of different conversations being on the producer's end with producers that we didn't have as performers, and kind of connecting in a different level with some of those people. And yeah, there's a few home truths, right, that you talk to people about, and you you realize, gosh, you rely on each other, right, to help pave the way for other people. And I think the more people that do this sort of thing, I mean, this year even, there's so many emerging theatre companies and doing bigger shows, which is really special, because that's just more opportunity for everyone, right?
Yeah,
it's more ability to shine, yeah.
I think it's really hard if you haven't been involved with every single facet of a production to properly understand what's going on and to properly be able to work out how these things actually work beyond your role, you know, and to properly understand how everything interlinks, right? And I think part of not just producing it, but doing such a massive scale project with an admin team of two people, right? Handling, you know, we're also the costume team, right?
Yeah.
And we're currently 2/3 of the seamstressing team. And, you know, we're also doing the entirety of the marketing.
Your house will just look like the backstage.
It's a mess. It is a mess.
It's a tip. Yeah. Every time I go home, I can't live like this.
I know.
It's just like coats everywhere.
And post show, where you pack out really quick.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
My ex-wife, probably for a reason, used to hate final night of the show. Like, you could actually, it was building up in her, because she knew the next day I was just going to dump everything in the lounge, costume set, props, everything that we hadn't found storage for or needed returning to different theatres around the country. And then every day it was like, when are you doing it?
Well,
I was like, I'm too tired.
Yeah.
I can't face getting that back to New Plymouth. That'll be next week. Yeah, but it was, I could actually feel the angst. Yeah. Only theatre people know that pain.
Absolutely. I think it's a blessing we're doing it together, because otherwise, they would definitely.
How do you look after yourselves, as, you know, in a relationship scenario and producing and then performing together? Like, do you have your own rules? I'm being really, really invasive here, but how do you look after yourselves?
We do have
yourselves?
Rules. And it's been like, I mean, obviously, we only started this year doing these shows and putting them on, and we've had to like really sit down and be like, okay, where do we separate personal and work, and how do we, because we're literally around each other 24/7, like, actually.
Look, we are very lucky that we don't really disagree very much at all or fight about really anything ever, so it's very smooth sailing in that sense. It's more just like separating our, like, you know, getting, because we're so involved with everything, managing our lives so that we kind of have rules in the way of, like, once we've eaten dinner, we're done.
No,
and we're not allowed to think about anything, because otherwise we just won't sleep.
Not even
and we will stay up and work until 3 a.m. and then we'll go to sleep, and then we'll wake up and we'll work all day, and then we'll do a rehearsal, and then we'll come home and we'll work, and we would literally never stop.
Yeah. No, good on you. And I guess it's picking your battles. If you do agree most of the time, then occasionally going, well, I disagree, but it's very rare, do I? So you can have this one.
Hugely. Yeah. And, actually, I think we say sorry to each other all the time, preemptively, even if, like, it doesn't require that. Just because I think it's really important to remember, because it's such an emotionally invasive job, right? Mm. And we all know that, even as performers. It's, it takes everything out of you. And there has to be that ability to just be like, this is not actually important. Yeah, it seems important right now, but it's not in the scheme of life, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Good but, on yeah. you. Good
I think there's
you.
Also, like, a really important mutual respect where we'll both sit here and think, oh, maybe this is one of those rare moments where we disagree, but that probably means there's simply two good options.
Right.
Because I wouldn't really, I can't think of any times where, like, I've disagreed about a creative decision that Rose has had that's different to mine, where I've thought that the idea was bad, you know? Mm. It's more just that in my mind, I've, like, imagined it in one way, and she's imagined it another way, and that, like, if I hadn't imagined anything and she had told me that, I probably would have jumped on it immediately, you know? But it's just like...
You're totally in sync. Totally
yeah.
in sync.
Ellen Arbett.
All right. We're nearly out of time. Jackson, what are you looking forward to most about the actual season? Is there a part of the show? Is it the audience reaction? Is it a favourite song? What is it that you're going, I can't wait till?
I think it's going to be Go Go Joseph, the closing okay. number of Act 1. It is a crazy, crazy scene with a heck of a lot going on, but the ending is just so epic, and if I can get the dance moves down and hold my hands up when the people are clapping and feel happy, then I'm glad. That's got my high for the season.
Wow, that's a sales pitch just in itself. Fantastic.
So
fantastic.
Good, yeah.
And what's on for you after? I've asked these guys, what's next? What's on for you after this?
Well, I'm studying my Bachelor of Performing and Screen Arts over at Unitech. So I finished that in November.
Cool.
So straight after this, we're in our graduation show. And then from there, my partner and I, who's also in the show, she's in the dance ensemble, Greta, we do a little bit of social media. Mm-hmm. That's been doing really well. So I think
popping
after this,
off.
we're going to double down and see how much we can get done with that. And yeah, but also see, you know, I want to just keep doing musicals. So the eyes are always open.
Did these young two inspire you to one day perhaps produce?
I would love to. I just don't know that I'd be very good at it. or I don't know if I'd be very good at switching off like these two.
Right.
I find it extremely hard. I'm a very obsessive person when I enjoy something. So I find it really, really hard to turn it off. Even with the social media stuff, like when I go to bed, I'm thinking, what's my next skit for tomorrow? What am I filming tomorrow? What do these numbers mean? Like, I literally can't switch that part of my brain off. And so I think it would have to be one or the other if I were to.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it is an art form. Yeah. Yeah. How are ticket sales going? How can our listeners help you out?
Oh, come on, guys. Book tickets. You'll love it. We have the lineup of this cast is exceptional. You can head to www.iticket.co.nz, search up Joseph, and it'll come up.
When does it open?
Opens 26th of September to the 10th of October. We have a star cast pharaohs that you can see different nights.
Andrew Alamora, Nick Hall, Anita Wiglet. Sorry, those are the same person. Nick Hall is Anita Wiglet, famous drag queen. Andrew Papas and Electroshock, who is James Luck, our choreographer, who's also a Drag Race Down Under winner.
So you're
going to have to go
night.
More than once to see all these different
you've
people.
You've got to see all four, got to catch them all.
Expensive, yes. But good marketing ploy. Yeah.
Right?
And they all have a different interpretation on the character. I won't say what those are, but they're all trying something very different from each other. Mm-hmm. So that's another interesting thing to come and see for. It's not just four different people, it's four completely different interpretations of the song and the role. Yeah.
Love it. Mm. Well, congratulations, guys, on producing yet another show. All the best for your season. We'll look forward to seeing it. Have a fabulous time bringing Joseph back to life. And we'll look forward to catching up with whatever your next adventure might be.
Thank you.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah. We're going to close out with a version from the King's Academy of Close Every Door to Me. It's Nathaniel Adams. Actually, Jackson, is this a tough song to nail or make your own?
I think it's hard because of the emotional sort of arc of it. Like,
yeah.
It, you know, it starts very, very, he's very sad. He's just been locked in a prison cell. It's pretty dark, but it sort of transforms into this song of sort of power from himself that he draws from somewhere. So I think the arc and getting the emotion right in the song, for me at least, is slightly harder than singing the actual song. It's just getting the message right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we'll take a listen. These guys are going to go home now and Google YouTube Andrew Lloyd Webber's show about it, huh? Enjoy. Here's Nathaniel Adams and the King's Academy with Close Every Door.
Close every door to me, hide all the world from me, bar all the windows and shut out the light. Do what you want with me, hate me and laugh at me, darken
Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat. Head to iticket.co.nz. Let's support these young producers. I mean, how cool, Kristen?
At least once.
Yeah, go and see it at least once. I know you're going to have to go and see it multiple times. Because you can't do these double casts. It bothers you. You have to see them all.
I'm so curious, especially for something that I love so much, like Joseph. Been seeing it, you know, for decades and seeing it change. And, yeah, I'm just so curious on how other people do it. And, you know, you just got, and there's just so many different songs that you, that it's not boring. They just like, Logan, I think, said that it changes the genre, so it keeps things moving along. And, yeah, I'm, I can't get enough.
Brilliant. All right, well, from theatre to books now, and it's time to have our weekly slot catching up with a fabulous author. Who have we got tonight, Kristen?
So we have David, and is it Schnauer?
Schnauer it is.
Yes, David Schnauer with Uncomfortable Economics, Hard Policy Decisions New Zealand's Politicians Can No Longer Avoid. Welcome,
David. Sounds like a
David.
Light topic for the evening.
I know.
Take it away.
Oh, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay, so talk to us about your journey, because you didn't start out as a writer. So what? So talk to us about that, because it's a very interesting.
Well, I better give you my age, too. I'm 76. I'm a retired lawyer. I did both law and economics at university. Wow. Economics was always a central interest of mine, and I've come back to economics in retirement. And I exchange economic material with one particular friend as well, but I read a lot of it, and I'm very interested in it and frustrated with New Zealand's under economic performance over my life. I've finally been driven to write a book about it.
Oh, and if it's not too much to it's not too nosy, how long have you been retired?
13 years.
Oh, wow. And did you start writing at that point, or is this something that's even more recent?
It took me a year to write. I wrote a few articles for, I put some material up on a website. I then wrote articles for the newspapers, but didn't get a lot of traction. And finally, I was driven to write a book, which I've now done. And that took me about a year. And then there's a period of several months between when you finish writing and when it's finally hits the market. So I think I really started at the beginning of 2025.
Which is incredible, because this is not a light book. It's a very dense, very all-encompassing, and I'm going to give it a spoiler alert. To stay very objective, you tell lots of different sides of these situations that you're talking to. So it's like, in a year is not a long time for a book like this.
Well, I worked at it fairly steadily. And I mean, I think in a legal practice, you focus on files, so you're used to applying your concentration and working at things. I would pick you up on one point when you say it's not a light book. I have tried, based on an economist I read quite a lot from the US, and he says when I'm writing, I always think I'm writing to friends and telling them that. I don't write economics. And it's... He writes very well. I love his newsletters every week. And I said to myself, I'm going to write like I'm talking to friends. And so it's not a dense read. I hope it's a light read with a bit of story and a bit of personal in it, because I hope that conveys the message better.
It really helped me to be able to kind of embrace these topics. And I don't mean light like light. I meant like it's a long book. And so it was easier for me, because I don't have a legal background or an economics background, to be able to understand what you're saying, get involved, see it from different points of views, and kind of get on board with what you were saying at every angle. That's what I really meant. And that's what I enjoyed about reading it is it wasn't, I mean, I've had to read a lot of contracts in my life, and this was not that. So it was a very good storyteller on a subject that is not, you know, not simple.
Yes and no. Yeah, one can get into mathematical economy, models of economies. One can get into dense economic material. I intentionally did not do that. But yes, the subjects behind it can get very theoretical. But I've certainly not put that into the book.
So you just briefly mentioned your process. So what is your process for writing?
I think probably from years of legal experience, you find that you struggle a bit in the first third of a chapter or the first third of a legal document. You then get into a swing of things. Your thoughts clarify as you get to the end. Then you go back and you recast or at least amend, often quite significantly, the first part of your chapter. And I found on average I could write a chapter a week or something like that. I mean, a challenging one take a bit longer or you'd get interruptions. But that's as good a summary as I can give you.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good because you, that's exactly right. It said at the beginning of a chapter, I was feeling like, oh, am I going to be able to understand it? And then the more that I read it, I was like, wow, okay, I'm really getting into this. I'm really understanding this. So I like that.
Well, I thank you for that. And I take, you know, that is praise to me because that's what I tried to achieve. And if the readers are telling me that's happened, then that's excellent news.
Yeah, I would have never thought that. I would have never thought if I picked it up, would I read this? And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to because it is different than what I thought it was going to be. Like, there are parts that are uncomfortable. I like that you're very honest about that. This is going to be an uncomfortable book. Yet, I didn't feel, not only was I felt uncomfortable, but not struggling to get through it. So that is, I think that's really important when you're talking about the topics that you're talking about.
Thank you. And I intended it to be uncomfortable in the sense that I feel New Zealanders have to be a little confronted, that the country has not done well. And I'm writing in a very long time frame of 75 years. So I'm saying I'm a baby boomer. When I was born, the country was doing very, very well. It was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And over my lifetime, we've steadily gone backwards. And we're not catastrophic, but we're slowly heading towards dropping out of first world status if we don't do better. And so I did intend the book to be confronting in the sense that I'm saying to Kiwis, wake up. And I'm saying to them, get off the economic couch because you haven't focused on the economy enough and we're not going forward enough. And I'm saying these are some policies where the economy is significantly unbalanced. And I'm on a crusade, if you like, to tell people that and to try and drive some change.
I think that's a really good way of putting it so that people aren't surprised when they pick it up and say, oh, wow, this is a little bit confronting, because by your own admission, you're saying this is what you're doing and this is what you believe in. And it comes through really apparent in the book.
And the politicians, I mean, it's election time and they're busy telling us they've got it all under control and everything's fine and whatever. So I'm saying, well, hold on a minute. I got a different message. And I mean, as I say, I had to walk a fine line. I'm trying to talk degree. What New Zealand has done economically is not disastrous, but neither is it as good as it has been, as it should be. And so I'm trying to draw that line somewhere there that says uncomfortable, and we struggled over picking the right word, uncomfortable. You shouldn't be relaxed about this. It's not catastrophic, but it's not good enough, and you should be thinking, gosh, we're going to have to change things and do better.
That is, I'm going to jump to the end, because what you say at the end is you give like some really good ideas of what can we do instead of it just being, this is my opinion or this is what's wrong or you're blaming this person or whatever. You actually offer up some really compelling ideas at the end. So it's like, stick with it to the end, because it gets really, I did feel lighter. Because I was like, these are really good. I was like, we should be doing more of these things, even in everyday life, not just in economics. So it's, I found it to be kind of lifted up at that point.
You're getting your own life book review. Do you realize that? That's very good.
I love reading, and I love like, that's, you know, cool. Figuring out like what's going to keep me hooked. Okay, so do you think? Oh, go ahead. I think you wanted to say something.
Well, actually, we got a slightly... At some point, I'd like to just give you the overall message, too.
Yes.
Are you coming to that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, that was my... Actually, I have one question before we get to that.
Yes.
And that is, do you think writing later in life changed maybe this book? Maybe if you wrote it you know, 20 years ago, but now you've had all this other experience. Do you think that book would have, this book would have been different?
Definitely.
Okay.
I think your perspective on life definitely changes with age. I mean, mine is sufficiently dissatisfied with the nation's performance that I've been driven to write a book, but at the same time, in other ways, I would say I'm more measured than I would have been as a younger person, and I have stressed in the book at several places that I was not going to write a negative tirade about New Zealand. I was going to say, look, we're not doing well enough, but I was also going to make sure I added plenty of positive suggestions for improvement, because I think the media can be too negative, and I was determined not to fall into that gap, and I was determined to produce a balanced thing that says we've got to do better, but here's some positive ways we could do it.
Amazing. Okay, so now tell us an overview of the book now that we've whetted everybody's appetite.
Well, I'll tell you the central economic theme, and I'm not sure, Stephen, if you're going to be entirely happy with this, because I understand you're in real estate. But
that's okay. I got my arts hat on.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, that's all right. I am saying in the book that over my lifetime, and particularly from when compulsory superannuation was abolished by Sir Robert Muldoon in 1975, that the New Zealand economy has been unbalanced, overly focused on houses and gaining wealth from house price appreciation, and underinvested and underfocused on the real economy, in other words, the commercial sector. And the key thesis in my book is that we need to rebalance the New Zealand economy back onto the real economy, with much less emphasis on the housing economy. And I developed themes for doing that, and matched with that rebalancing, I'm saying that the New Zealand population, Kiwis as a whole, do not want economic progress enough. When the All Blacks lose, they get very excited very quickly, and the coach should be this or the something should be that. But the economy underperforms year after year with no significant population-wide uprising saying this is not good enough, we're going to have to really change what's happening in the country. So get Kiwis off the economic couch and get them much more progressive in thinking, how can we build a better economy, and rebalance that economy away from its previous emphasis on housing and onto the real economy. And you focus on the real economy by getting people to invest in KiwiSaver, and the fund managers of KiwiSaver then put the funds that are saved with them, they put it to work in the real economy. So that means the whole population ultimately ends up owning a share portfolio. They may be invested in other things as well, but it puts a lot more assets into the real economy. And that's the way, in theory, the rebalancing should take place.
Have you sent your book to our politicians?
I sent the book to a number, including the Minister of Finance.
Brilliant.
And to be honest, a friend of mine went to a meeting about a week ago and asked her a question about it, and she hadn't heard of the book.
Oh.
So it gets buried in the mail, and I'm not expecting they're all going to read it the moment they open the parcel I send them. I thought I should send it.
Good on you.
I also sent a copy to the Reserve Bank and the Treasury. I haven't heard back from either of them. I don't know whether it's shock or what it is, but look, politicians have such pressure on them that they can hardly read 2 minutes, let alone read a book. So it's hard. I understand that side of it, but I do wish they take it into account when they formulate policy more.
Mm-hmm.
Because if more politicians read this book, this is what I think, is that you give a case for both, like, all the sides of the story. So maybe it would be a little bit of a, oh, yeah, you know what? I don't really think about the people enough, or the people thinking, oh, you know what? I don't think long-term enough. Like you kind of come at it from so many different angles that everyone could potentially have a piece of this book and figure out what small things they could do that would lead to a long-term changes, which is what I want to ask you. Do you have what would be three things that if somebody was listening tonight, they could say, okay, I can consider that before I go pick up the book, to get them excited about oh, maybe I should pick up this book because I think I could do these few things.
Well, I think one of the things I struggled with in the book is I recognise that the government finances are very stretched, that the costs of super and healthcare are rising over $3 billion every year without the politicians doing anything. The finances are very stretched. So I said, there's no point in me writing a book that says you've got to spend all this money. And indeed, I did the other, and I said, this is how you could balance the budget. So I put that in there. But I took care in the book not to advocate big spending things. So, for example, when I talked about climate change, I regard that as very much a secondary issue. I don't think New Zealand is a serious problem in that area, but I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't pursue it within reasonable limits. And I said, put a tax on fossil fuels like petrol and use the money you raise to reduce the price of electricity, which is largely renewable based, so that you can raise money in one area and use it in another, and that way it's a fiscally neutral thing, which is feasible for the government. Again, in trying to switch people from housing to superannuation, I said, put on capital gains tax on housing, and I said and also a stamp duty. Sorry about that. And at the same time, use the money raised to reduce the direct taxes people pay, so that they keep more of their earnings and therefore can get ahead more by working hard and progressing that way, and also saving more through KiwiSaver. So, one example, I've made a number of suggestions which won't have any impact on the government budget, but would be picked up, which could be picked up, and I think deliver quite significant improvements to the way the New Zealand economy operates.
What I also like about the book is that it did evoke emotion in me. And you say that. You say people are emotional. It's hard for them to change. Yet I liked it that it was, I could get emotional, but then it was, but I could do something about it. Or I could, think about something a little bit differently. Because I did, even in the, I couldn't read the whole book, but what I read, I started my imagining different things. And you say that too. You're like, one of my favorite parts that I read where you said, let your imagination run wild and come up with these solutions. And I just thought, that is so, because and this is where it becomes interesting to be on Kick Arts, is that that's what we do here at Kick Arts, is it's, we get our imagination going. So if I thought that I was going to pick up a book about economics and politics and it was going to be let your imagination run wild, I was like, I'm in for this.
And I think I'm saying that also from this point of view, that as humans, we tend to think within in a sphere. So we're used to operating within this range. And if somebody says, okay, but actually I'm talking about going outside the range, then that actually is slightly confronting for people, because they have to get out of their little comfort zone on that issue and say, you can look at that totally differently, or maybe we should do away with this, or maybe we should stand it on its head. And so I think when I start talking about let your imagination go and things, I'm saying this is actually challenging the conventional wisdom in New Zealand, like the conventional wisdom that the way you provide your retirement is you get on the housing ladder, the house goes up in value, and you sell the house when you retire, and that's, you buy you downsize to retirement village, and the rest, what's left over, is your retirement nest egg. Now, I'm saying that modus operandi, I don't criticise people for pursuing it, because that's been the conventional wisdom in New Zealand. But what I am saying is that I want people to think differently. The way you get ahead, save hard, build up a good KiwiSaver balance and retire with a decent pension that's provided by your savings through that. That's a whole transition in thinking. Mm. So, yes, you have to let your imagination run wild a little bit to change the way that New Zealanders have got into a tunnel vision on certain issues.
Right. And to the point of there's not one way, right? Just, you know, and because even I feel that sometimes, like, oh, how are we ever going to be able to afford a house? You're saying that's not the only way. Mm-hmm. I could be looking at it a different way. And then all of a sudden, the ducks are lining up a different way in my mind. And I just think, oh, yeah, because you said it so well. You say, you know, what you do now, like if you change 1% or you save 1% now in 40 years, just not to, you know, gut react to let it ride, let it ride, let it ride, let it ride. And I just think that's what we need now is people to tell us just like to just slow down and not act. And I mean, react. And that's what I found really heartening about it.
Thank you. And I'm saying get the basics right. Get the country growing at an extra 1% a year. And I've talked the disappointment over my lifetime of 76 years, and I'm looking forward another 75 years to 2100. And I'm saying 1% a year extra growth doesn't sound very much for 1 year, but if you can project that over a long period, that doubles. That's twice what you started out from. So it's very important, raise the growth rate by a modest amount for a long period will return excellent dividends.
So did you like Labor's announcement today that they would make stricter regulations for employers to increase their minimum contribution to 6%?
I particularly like National's policy, which I said in my book, Compulsory Super with 7 plus 7. Labor has said compulsory super for employers, but not for employees
right.
at the same rate. So, I mean, I said to my wife before I came over, actually, what a pity they couldn't say, look, we're not far apart. Let's just bring in a common policy and avoid all the political debate. That's disappointing. Now, a key part of my chapter on superannuation as well is at the moment, New Zealand taxes your contribution before you make it to the to KiwiSaver. They tax your salary that the employer is going to pay into the fund, and they tax the fund earnings, so that it's called TTTE, in other words, taxed from both employer and employee before they put their money in, tax from the fund earnings, and then when you get your money out when you retire, it comes out exempt from tax. Now, pretty much all the models overseas are the opposite. You put your money in from pre-tax earnings, the employer pays in from pre-tax earnings, the fund is not taxed on its gains every year, and when you take your money out, when you retire, you pay tax then. So the government at the moment is taking, I calculate in the book, the figures are all there, about $4.5 billion a year out of KiwiSaver funds that should be going into the funds and being saved, and we'd accumulate them very much quicker. So I certainly agree with National saying compulsory, and I said 7 plus 7, 14. They've said 6 plus 6, 12. Well, we don't quibble about that very much. But I am saying very important that they make it tax-free while it's being accumulated, while it's being saved, and only pay tax at the end. And that will mean the funds will be accumulated multiple times quicker.
Wow. We're nearly out of time. So two quick-fire questions here, David. Who do you want to pick this book up? Who do you think should have this book on their bedside table tomorrow?
Informed voters.
Okay, good answer. Okay. And second question, is there another book in the making?
Well,
have you got the bug now?
You'll have to talk to my wife about that.
She said no more economics at the dinner table.
Well, I think, put it this way, it's a very large commitment, and she said to me, you know, we could have perhaps even had overseas holiday with the amount of time and money that's going into your book. She's been fantastically supportive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it
I
is
know where you're coming
it
from. It's a huge commitment.
It is a commitment in the family. Mm. So let's see what happens with this one.
Did you say, dear, the holiday's coming on the earnings from the book? People are going to get out. Yeah.
I think that might be lucky if it's down the road somewhere.
Aww. Well, where can they get the book?
Yeah, where can people
that's
get it?
That's our last question. Yeah, well, where can we get this
it's
book?
It's distributed right through bookshops in New Zealand. It's also online at Amazon. You want to download it for your Kindle.
Congratulations, yeah, by the way. That is quite a feat to write a book when, you know, we think, oh, you know what? Maybe after retirement, I don't have a, you know, something really great to give. You are giving it. Thank you so much. I'm inspired. I'm gonna finish this
good book review.
Yeah.
Well done. Live book review. It can be dangerous.
Thank you, both of you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, David. Go and support him. Grab the book from your local bookshop. We're going to take a music break now, and Kapiti Coast singer-songwriter Steph Casey released Merced, the moving first track of her forthcoming third body of work, beautifully composed on an antique heirloom lip piano. This is a very different track for your night. Take a listen.
Merced is a city in Central California, United States, in the San Joaquin Valley. Unemployment, homelessness, and crime is high, and the violent crime rate is one of the highest in the country. The chances of becoming a victim of violent or property crime is 1 in 25. The word Merced is Spanish for mercy.
It's Central California, 7,000 miles from home. Scorched hot, battered suitcase left, traveling on my own. Wildfires broke down, flames and smoke, fear and panic all around. Stuck in Merced, no transport out.
Tracy with Merced on a composed on a beautiful antique heirloom lip piano. How cool is that?
That was perfect after our interview.
I know.
It's well placed.
Well placed. All right, time now to catch up with Lucy Summerfield to hear about her latest music, always described as an immersive experience, her music. Welcome to the show, Lucy.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great having you. And before we even talk about the track we're going to play, just take us back. When did music first kick off for you?
Well, I've been told that I was writing songs about ducks when I was about two. So I think around talking was when I started discovering that music could be written. But I really hope I've improved since then. I was working hard at it. And then really for me, it was high school competitions like Rock Quest and Play It Strange and Hook, Line and Sing Along through NZ Music Commission that made me see that actually there's some really cool opportunities you can get with songwriting. And I just really enjoyed the whole process of recording and of really perfecting a song to get an idea across. That's kind of how I started, and I've just kept chasing that high ever since.
Brilliant. Who's inspired you musically over the years?
I always answer Bic Nonga because I just remember hearing her beautiful Collisions album and having that kind of be the soundtrack of my childhood. Recently I've been listening to a lot of Aldous Harding and Anna Coddington. I think they're both really incredible songwriters, but in such different genres. So I've enjoyed that as well. And also Crichton House has always been a bit of a touchstone for me. I think that the songwriting of Neil Finn is really incredible. And the Muttonbirds as well, John McGlashan's songwriting, really incredible. Just the way that stories are captured.
Now, we always ask music guests, you know, what comes first, the lyrics or the music? And you're very poetic in your music creation. So is it lyrics first for you?
It really depends. So I say that I came to music through writing. I was kind of a short stories, poems in my bedroom kind of kid. And then I realized that I could set those to music, which I also enjoyed. And I thought, so when I'm writing in English, often the lyrics will kind of come with a chord or with a melody first, and then I kind of build the rest of the song around a little snippet that I've made on my guitar. But when I'm writing in Te Reo Māori, because I'm not fluent, it's really important that the lyrics are corrected and looked over by someone else before I do anything with them, because I don't want to set a tune that then has to be changed. So for that, when I'm writing in Te Reo Māori, the lyrics always come first, and then they're always checked and looked after by someone else, and then the tune comes next.
Nice, nice. So tell us about the music you're working on now and the album you're busy producing.
Well, each track is a lesson that I've learned since kind of leaving home, and they're all little things that I kind of thought that I'd figured out, and then suddenly you're out in the wide world and you're like, whoa. So the two that have released so far, Kia Kaua, which is all about learning how to deal with grief and grief in people around you. We Are Learning Too is about all of the kind of struggling with identity when you've left home. And then When I Leave is about looking back at home and realizing that it's not quite home anymore. And where do you call home when you haven't lived there in ages, but you also don't really feel like, where you're studying is home either. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've talked to a few artists over the last few weeks, actually, that have been overseas, and a lot of their music is about, you know, where to call home. It seems to be a bit of a thought in people's minds. Is it, you know, is it the current state of the world that we think more about home at the moment?
I'm not sure. For me, I've always been really wanting a place to kind of sink my roots into. And I remember I grew up in Christchurch, and for a long time I was very staunchly from Christchurch. And now I'm very staunchly from Motueka, because I realise that I've been so formed by that place, and I wouldn't be able to be who I am without the community there, the things that I've learned from living there, and the amazing support that I get from that community. And so also the song is not just a longing for home, but also a real celebration. And so I think that's cool too, to be able to look back and be like, this thing that I'm away from is really beautiful, and I can see it on the whole now.
Nice. What do you have in the pipeline coming up? Is the live performances on the horizon?
There's always kind of a mushrooming, but I don't have anything set at the moment. But what I do have is more releases coming up. So this single that we're going to hear is the second one in an EP, which I actually don't know if I've officially announced it. Maybe this is the official announcement.
This is it.
Announcement,
yeah.
Everybody. I have an EP coming out. And so there's some more releases coming for that, which are really exciting. And the next one I'm really stoked with as well, it's a bilingual wife. It's the first one I've written in both English and Te Reo. And it's all about coming together and community and how the strongest thing we can do as people is collect and go forward together, which I think, again, is just a nice thing to be able to sing about in these times that feel like they can be quite divisive. Yeah, so that's kind of what's next in the pipeline.
Lovely. Look, we've only got a little bit of time, so we're going to need to play your track tonight, but we'd love to talk to you in full length. So if you ever come up to Auckland, you need to promise to come in on a Sunday night and chat with us for half a show. We will keep playing your tracks every time you send them to us, so keep them coming our way. Where can people follow you, support you, and track your music down?
If they want to support me, Bandcamp is a really great place because you can actually buy the music and the money goes to me. I'm also on all streaming platforms, so whatever you're using, I'm there. You can find me on Instagram if you want to hear about what I'm doing. I post semi-regularly. But turning up to gigs, ask me how I'm going, those are also great ways to support.
Love it. Oh, we could talk to you all night, but let's play your track. So we're going to close with When I Leave. It's Lucy Summerfield, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Lovely to chat again.
Take care.
Mountains stacked in jagged lines like someone's ripped up bits of night and glued them onto the horizon. Hills rolling like a tube and threaded through with silver. Can end up on the front page of the newspaper. Kind of place where people come together. You'll find them in any kind of weather, out in gum things, trying to help you get through the worst of any season. Lights now, those overcoat or unnew. Since I was lost in town, the lady down the road died a couple months ago. How come I didn't know? How come I didn't know? I thought that it would wait. I thought things wouldn't change. How come I didn't know? How come I didn't know?
This is Summerfield, When I Leave. What a great track. Go and support these fabulous artists. Now, we've just got a couple of minutes left and a few bulletins that have hit our inbox this week. And a reminder that people book onto our shows a good 6 to 10 weeks in advance. So we hate saying no to people. So email us info@kickarts.org.nz. If you have something coming up October, November or December, now's the time to book in. What's in our inbox, Kristen?
All right. Gareth Medic is an absurd live comedy game show coming to the Basement Theater from the 22nd to the 26th of September. This is three popular local comedians competing in maths-based challenges, kind of like the Guymont Spelling Bee, but with a guy named Gareth, and it's math instead of spelling.
Brilliant. Sounds fun. Now, Pause by Erica Soria is at Silo 6 in Silo Park in Wynyard Quarter here in Auckland. Opens on the 17th and runs to the 20th of September from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. daily. Pause is an immersive, site-responsive installation by Argentine artist Erica Soria, created inside Silo Park. It invites moments of pause, reflection and quiet connection, exploring the relationship between the human body, objects and architecture that contains them. Visitors are welcome to simply drop by during opening hours. Entry is free and it's at the corner of Beaumont Street and Jellicoe Street in Wynyard Quarter.
Amazing. Okay, we also have Stray Theatre Company presents the Gobline and Swallow Inn. Hey, it's playing at the Pitt Street Theater at 78 Pitt Street from the 23rd to the 26th. Tickets from $15 or $20 at straytheatercompany.com/tickets. Now, this is thrilling adventures, fantastical locations, mysterious and enchanting people, but mostly it's just silly. So, the Gobline and... Or the goblin, maybe it's the goblin, and the Swallow Inn. Check it out.
That'll be it. Buskers from all over the country and the world are able to apply to join the party in the Christchurch World Buskers Festival, kicking off in January. For more than three decades, the World Buskers Festival has transformed Christchurch into a giant open-air stage where street performers, circus artists, comedians, musicians and creative mischief makers bring the unexpected to life. All buskers are welcome to Christchurch. If this is something that could interest you, find out more at worldbuskersfestival.co.nz.
Okay, now, Cabaret is extending to a fifth and final week because it is so popular. So, it's at the ASB Waterfront... Where is it? Okay. The ASB Waterfront Theater in Wynyard Quarter from the 22nd of September to the 25th of October. You can get tickets at atc.co.nz or ticketmaster.co.nz. I cannot wait to see this.
Me too. There's so much good stuff coming up for the next 3 months. If you have something, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. I'm off to Tauranga this week to the opening night of Wicked. Can't wait. Oh. We've got another very busy couple of weeks ahead with lots on, but we're out of time, so we're going to close the show with the Drax Project, who have released a new track called Dada or Dada. Have a fabulous week. Thanks for filling in, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
And for reading that book. You're awesome. And make sure you
kick some arts.
Sansa says I'm old now, but we met in close. Move back to your hometown, closer to your folks. Yes, it's speeding up now. I want you to know I'm happy to slow down, breathe into my nose. Company I chose. Ain't perfect, but I'm better than I was. Comfort in my soul. Some purpose beats money after all. I got a new nickname today. My angel said D-A-D-A. My starts to make a little sense when she calls me D-A-D-A. Prettier than sunshine, a little wonderful. And even though last night we didn't sleep at all, just another sunset left before it rose. Hold on to your first step, wait till I get home. Company I chose. So perfect, I'm happier because
There's comfort in my soul. So worth it and I'll never let it go. I got a new nickname today. My angel said D-A-D-A. I start to make a little sense when she calls me D-A-D-A. When she calls me D-A-D-A, na 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 na. When she calls me, I got a new nickname today. My angels.
So brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live same time under the stars, saying blah 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 blah. Let's go kick some.